Welcome to the Revenue Lounge, a podcast for revenue operations professionals who want to understand the various facets of this important go-to-market function. In each episode, the team at Nectar interviews revenue warriors on how they are reimagining revenue operations in creative and disruptive ways, and what are their secrets to building a scalable and predictable revenue engine. Let's get started.
Pipeline growth is the lifeblood of any business. But in today's economic climate, marketing teams are being asked to do more with less. Budget cuts, hiring freezes, and increased pressure to prove ROI are forcing teams to rethink their approach. Traditional demand generation strategies may no longer be enough. So how do you drive sustainable pipeline growth when resources are tight? Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Revenue Lounge podcast. I am your host, Randy Likas. And in this episode, we will dive into the smart, cost-effective strategies that marketing teams can use to maximize pipeline impact. And joining me today is Julie Kaplan. She is the leader with experience in building brands, driving pipeline growth, and customer retention in high-growth B2B and B2C environments. Julie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So Julie, I usually like to start these episodes and just have you walk us through a little about your background, your career journey, and your role today at CareMedx.
Sure. I've been in marketing, it's hard to imagine it's been this long, but over 30 years. I've had the privilege of doing a lot, working in several different industries and working across different disciplines. So I have some B2C experience. I have B2B experience. I've worked in insurance. I've worked in financial institutions. In the last several years, I've been heavy up in the healthcare industry. And my last job was CareMedx. I think we'll spend the most time talking about my experiences there.
Fantastic. The topic at hand is how do marketers make the most out of the current environment that I think many teams are working out of, which is either flat or shrinking budgets, right? So would love to just get your perspective. Like, how should marketing leaders shift their approach to pipeline generation in an environment where they don't have necessarily a huge budget increase from the prior year?
Right. So my approach, and I think this has been really pretty successful over the years, and it keeps the team focused on the right efforts, which is focus less on did we get more and focus more on how do we do what we're already doing much, much better than we're doing today.
Yeah.
So when you're growing, you're adding on activities often, and you're not necessarily getting into the weeds about doing it perfectly, because you know when you throw up a new campaign or you add this new vehicle, you know, just putting it out there gets you 85% of the way. In these times of constraint, it's that last 15% to focus on. Now is the time to optimize. Now is the time to dig into every detail. Are all your settings set correctly? Do you have every SEO option in there? Have you tested this word versus that word? There's a lot of really detailed work you can do when you're not focused on trying new things all the time.
Yeah. I love your analogy of let's try to do something better, because I think we're almost at a point right now that trying to do more and trying to squeeze more juice out is hitting a diminishing returns, right? We can only do so much more. And I think the question we should be asking ourselves is how do we do something better? And there's a big trend that's going on right now in the marketplace, which is MQLs and individual leads are just extremely inefficient and they don't convert. There's a huge waste. A lot of companies are leaning into this idea of buying groups or opportunity-based marketing motion, where we care less about the individual MQL and whether or not someone that we see signal from is scoring up. But what's more important is the swarming of activities in an account by multiple people. What are your thoughts?
Well, it's not an or, it's an and, right? So there are individuals in the buying group. You cannot ignore them. Yep. You want to pay attention to each individual in the buying group, and you need to look at the buying group as a whole. Yep. So this is one of those things you can focus on when you're not sort of, hey, we have new money, we have to throw on this new campaign and do this new thing. Now is the time to say, let's look at the buying behavior of each of the individuals. Let's look at how they behave as a group. Let's look at what their whole life cycle looks like and see what we can learn from that to make it better. Here's what buying groups that close look like, and here's what buying groups that don't close look like. Yeah. How can we make the ones that don't close look more like the ones that do close? So spend your time thinking about that. And again, it's not or, it's and.
Yeah. So building on that, so I think you're absolutely right. I think where a lot of people get hung up is having the alignment across teams. It's not sales or marketing, it's sales and marketing. And
that's right.
Too many times, marketers have a set of metrics that they're measured against, and sales has theirs, and success has theirs. And so these align, I think where a lot of people get caught up is improper alignment.
Right. Agree. 100%.
What recommendations would you make in terms of how do you actually operationalize consistent metrics or shared metrics across the different functions?
This may be a little controversial. Your marketing goals should be the same as your sales goals. There should be no difference between the two.
Yep.
Your marketing team should want the same sales that the sales team does. So if you're focusing just on what you turn over to sales, this is where the breakdown happens almost. So for me, this our sales team, our marketing team is whatever the goals of the sales team are. And then you sort of work backwards and figure out what additional goals do we need to hit in order to support those sales goals. Mm-hmm. So that's the way I do it. And we try and make those metrics as aligned as possible. There are some downsides to that at times, but I find especially when you have a newer marketing team or you have a marketing team that's learning how to be a mature marketing team, it's better to focus on making sure that these two teams are acting as one that have different roles in achieving a sale.
Yeah. So let's unpack that a little bit. So I agree with you 100% that we should have the same set of metrics. What are some of those metrics? Obviously, it's revenue, you know, pipeline or opportunity generation.
Yep. Pipeline right? generation.
Yeah. What are some of the other ones that you think should be shared?
Oh, that's a good question. I need to go back and look at the dashboard. But really, those are the big ones, right? Yeah. It's really all about pipeline and how much pipeline you are delivering in each part of the funnel. Yeah. The other part is looking at the motion through the funnel. So how much conversion can you get from top of funnel to the middle of the funnel? Yeah. Your salespeople probably aren't going to be focused until it's a lead that they can grab onto and take over. Yeah. So marketing really needs to make sure that they're following that motion from general interest to top of pipeline to middle of pipeline to, you know, it's time to turn it over to sales.
Yeah, I think too many times people think that marketing's job is to develop more leads. In fact, marketing's job is really to deliver engaged contacts on an opportunity. And we could probably look at from historical closed business, how many engaged contacts do we have to have in order to win a deal?
Right.
And then we know, like in for current pipeline, we've got two, but we typically need to have five. Well, marketing can now go work to deliver those other three people.
Right. And don't forget, you know, marketing isn't just acquisition. It's selling your existing customers.
Yeah.
So it depends on the business you're in, but it's really important to make sure that you remain present from a marketing perspective, not just an account management perspective, of course, but yeah. just like your goals for your sales team should be aligned, your goals with your account management team should be aligned, right? Yeah. What do you need to do to support them? So there's also cross-sell, upsell type goals that should be met as well. And sometimes when things are really tight, maybe you focus a little less on acquisition, which is very costly, and a little bit more on retention and upselling.
Yep. Especially in this environment. I think acquisition is so hard in this environment. Focusing on the customers and growing with the customers is probably a smart move, depending on the company. I mean, there's nuances, of course.
So it costs you so much more to acquire a new customer than it does to really service and upsell and cross-sell your existing customers. Now, if there's nothing to cross-sell and you're just squeaking every last dime out of your customer and it's not benefiting your customer, don't do that. But there's usually some unmet needs. And when you explore those and you make sure that there's this steady stream of marketing efforts in the background, they can also be prepared to have good conversations with their account management team.
So So I think you and I are in agreement as far as like shared metrics, not either or. But I think most companies are still struggling with that alignment. They don't have that, and they're still measuring different metrics. Why do you think that is? And what do people need to do to move the needle to where you think we should go?
I'm going to oversimplify it, right? So look, if you are focused on sales, you're going to be focused on delivering leads. That's a natural progression. Where it fails is delivering leads for the sake of delivering leads, where you have so zeroed in on the focus of that it's a lead and not the type of lead or the quality of lead. And if you get super focused on that, you're going to lose some alignment with your salespeople. And at some point, you just have to get real with yourself and decide what kind of marketing team you want to be. And you may have to rethink your goals. You may have to rethink how you accomplish delivering leads to your sales team.
So there's so much going on in the market right now around changing buyer preferences, even to what they were a couple of years ago, right? And so I think the latest research from Sixth Sense, and it's supported by others, is that buyers will go about 70% of the way through the journey without ever needing to talk to sales. They're doing their own research. They're talking to their colleagues. Because of that, there's this big debate around how much do we invest in generating demand and how much do we invest in building brand? And they're both important and both related. Would love your thoughts on that idea. And then how do you think about your budgeting for both of those?
Right. Again, here's going to be something a little bit controversial. I try not to separate them. You cannot build demand without having a steady drumbeat of your brand out there. Yep. We all know intuitively that you need to do it. But if you're measuring the efficacy of any of your brand efforts, they're going to look like something you should shut off. And you can test this. When you shut off your brand stuff, guess what? Your demand gen starts going down. We actually had to do that. And that is exactly what we found, right? We found when investment went down, so did leads, so did the performance. It wasn't just raw numbers that went down. The quality of the performance of all those efforts went down. So I look at it as, here's the marketing investment.
Yep.
I'll manage the details, but this is the whole marketing investment. Does it pay off or doesn't it pay off? Then as a marketing leader, you have to decide. There's some general benchmarks, like 50-50 might be the way, but you may have to test your way into, here's what 60% performance efforts with 40% brand efforts look like and vice versa, and see how the metrics change.
So you mentioned something there. I just want to ask one follow-up question. So when you start turning off one and you start seeing it, performance, typically when do you start seeing a drop off? Is it in quarter? Is it
a couple? We actually saw it immediately.
Really? Yeah.
Yes. We saw it immediately. It was, and we were measuring form fills, right? So I didn't actually analyze it until 3 months later. But what you could see is when we turned things off. So like when we're turning things on, there's a lag, right? It takes a long time. You're building up and then your performance, let's just call it form fills, right? Your investment looks like this and your form fills lags behind. When your investment goes down like this, your form fills go down right away. So what that tells you, or what that told me, what I learned from that is be careful when you turn things off, because it will take a lot longer to regain what you lost than to keep it on. So you're better off just having slower, low grade decline rather than just turning things off.
Kind of like exercise. When you go off your exercise program completely and you gain weight, it's a lot tougher to take that weight off as opposed to, instead of hitting the gym 5 days a week, let's hit it 3 days a week. And it's less focused. Okay, great. So you use probably a lot of different tools in your stack to target potential buyers. How do you leverage intent signals to help you personalize outreach at the different funnel stages?
Yeah, we actually, again, we didn't use a lot of tools. What we did was we tried to maximize and squeeze every last efficacy that you could find out of each tool that we had. So we did have limited tools. We used a CRM with marketing automation. We used an intent-based, account-based management intent system to evaluate each of our efforts and how they helped us. But where we really saw the efforts were when we looked backwards across the life cycle of, you know, we had long sales cycles, 12 to 18 months, right? Mm-hmm. So we saw what you mentioned earlier. As soon as a customer was visible to us, we saw a lot of activity before they were ready to have a meeting. Months and months, right?
Yep.
Multiple form fills, multiple clicks on ads, multiple downloads, multiple blog visits.
Yep.
And then 8 months later, there was a meeting. And 3 months after that, there was an opportunity opened.
So because of that, and I mean, it's very consistent with what we're seeing as well. The problem is, I think a lot of teams are not changing their playbooks in terms of what that means, right? So they're still calling mm-hmm. and chasing every single person who does a form fill or attends a webinar, and people mm-hmm. just aren't ready. And so I'm curious, in the context mm-hmm. of how do we change our marketing spend or our marketing budget, what are your thoughts? Do we change the way in which we have our SDRs, BDRs, how you work to try to meet people where they are? Do we goal them differently?
That's a good question. The way we handled it was in the form fill, right? We had them ask an answer. Are you ready to meet? Like, do you want someone to call you right away?
Yeah.
Or do you want someone to call you in 3 months? Or no, you don't want anyone to call you.
Got it.
And then if they said, we want to meet now or in 3 months, we called them away.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
It didn't matter, but we knew what the call was going to tell us, but we made sure to answer that. If they said no, we continued to market to them, but we didn't spend the time chasing them.
Yep.
Now, sometimes we saw that no over time turned into a yes, but we allowed those prospects to tell us when they were ready for a conversation.
Yeah, it sounds like you're meeting them where they are, right? Which is ultimately what they want. They don't want to be chased mm-hmm. with 10 emails and 5 voicemails. They're going to appreciate it more if you're working with them and trying to provide them content to meet them there in the process. So you had mentioned something recently on one of your LinkedIn posts, which I think is related to the tool piece. I want to just ask a question about it. It's pay attention to the machinery of our tools, right? I loved that. Can you explain that a little bit more in terms of what
you mean? So that kind of goes back to how we started this, which is what do you do when your budgets are restricted? Well, your machinery, right, has lots and lots of detailed levers in there. I'll give you an example. The intent software that we used, you can put a cap of 6 impressions a day or 4 impressions a day. We tested it. We had 4 impression cap because that was the default or something. And we tested a 6 impression cap, right?
Mm-hmm.
But guess what? We had way better results with a 6 impression cap. That's a very fine TDL. But if you add all of these things together, you're going to find better efforts. Another example of that is we were putting things up really fast and we still had a website that wasn't quite catching up. We didn't have forms on every page where there were people coming to visit us. We put forms on every page. We made sure there was a form on every page. We made sure we had the most recent form on every page. Some of those things are things that you lose sight of when you're working fast to start new efforts. But if you haven't gone back and optimized them, you're losing out. We saw an enormous improvement in form fills and quantity of form fills just by putting them up on the blogs where they weren't before,
mm-hmm.
moving them up to the top of the page.
Yeah.
So now maybe a sophisticated marketing department that's been around for 15 years or is like, we do that as a day job. Well, my guess is that there's probably still some things that could be recalibrated.
You know, I want to revisit something that we talked about earlier, which was like how expensive acquisition is and how we really should be focusing on our customers. I'm curious, from a customer marketing perspective, how does marketing work with customer success to better collaborate or better execute what success is doing to drive more pipeline from existing accounts?
Right. Well, that is, again, a listening tour to be had, right? Sit in on their quarterly business reviews, have regular conversations with them, start to understand what the customers are asking for, and make sure you're rendering those products and services to those customers. You are there to support your account management team as well. If you have an account-based marketing system and your account management team says this $3 million client is talking about these 5 things with us, well, guess what? That can be a $5 million client in 2 years if you're putting the right messages in front of them.
Yeah, especially think about like we may be working with a certain team, but mm-hmm. we're starting to see different personas that are engaging with us. Like,
right.
that's a whole new product upsell. But if we're not paying attention to that, and right. You know, typically what happens with success is after the purchase is made, we're delegated down to one person who's like the admin of the tool and the other people disappear. But we have to start paying attention to when all these other personas are starting to get involved.
Right. Or educating other personas about what the value of this tool is to them that they may not have thought about. Let's talk about a SaaS product, right? So sometimes when you're launching a product, and we know this as marketers, right? Because we use a lot of SaaS products ourselves, right? The way we use a SaaS product in the first 6 months of our experience is very different than 18 months later when we have experience.
Yep.
And it's not uncommon for us to sit back and say, had no idea it had this feature. Had no idea I could now do X, Y, Z with this.
Yep.
Well, if your clients have a product of yours and they're not aware of all their features, or their colleagues aren't aware of all the features because they have a day job to get through, they're not sitting there paying attention to every email you send out them, make sure that they have as many opportunities to know how best to use your products and services.
Yep.
The worst case scenario there is they just get better and better at using the exact same services they're already using. That's not a bad thing. That is retention. That is slowing down the decline of the relationship.
Yeah.
Keep it up.
Yeah. So let's talk about when forced to make budget cuts, right? Reallocations. Mm-hmm. What are the data points that you look at across your different programs and investments to help you inform where do I need to cut and what do I need to keep to improve my ROI?
Yeah, I mean, it really depends. We were looking mostly at form fills. So anything that drove immediate form fills, we were reluctant to scale back on at all.
Yeah.
And things that didn't relate to form fills, we would scale back on. But keep in mind, again, what I said earlier in the conversation, if you go to zero, you will see performance go down. So we were very careful about, okay, so maybe we don't have 5 triggered campaigns, we have 2 triggered campaigns, but we keep our brand campaign going, right? Mm-hmm. So you can scale back some of the incremental campaigns, but don't eliminate your background brand campaigns.
Yeah.
That'll just tank the performance of your demand gen.
I'd love to get your opinion on something that is just hugely debated. It's this topic of attribution, which some people like die on the vine with. They absolutely will believe in, we must show attribution. Others say it's just a vanity metric. And what's really important is, are we influencing or having a lift on our investments? What are your thoughts on attribution and ways to measure it?
Yeah, boy, I wish I didn't have to get into this conversation, but you know, marketing has to be able to deliver value. And you want to be able to say, who cares where the attribution comes from? Because at the end of the day, we're trying to achieve the same goal, right? We want sales to win new deals.
Yep.
And as soon as you introduce the attribution conversation, then you're separating sales from marketing, right?
Yep.
We own this and you don't own this, right?
You're forcing that silo that we talked about, we started the call. We want
right.
to begin with. Yeah.
Right. But you have to do it. Otherwise, marketing goes away, right? If you can't demonstrate that there's value in incremental pipeline being delivered by marketing, it's just too easy for them to say, oh, we'll just have more salespeople. Right. What do we need marketing for? It's an expensive thing. And we know we need it, but let's just slash it. Right. So you do need to understand and communicate. Here's the incremental value that marketing delivered to the pipeline. And without it, sales would not have had this deal, or this deal.
Yeah.
They still own the win. So that's the way I talk about it. Right.
Yeah.
Sales still owns the win. We brought in incremental wins for them.
Right.
And the way we did it, just to keep it simple, is if their first touch with the company was a marketing touch, whether that was a visit to a blog, a form fill, a click on an ad that we could observe, we attributed it to marketing. If sales brought in a relationship that they've had and there was no prior interaction there, then we called that, then it was not a sales, incremental sales opportunity. Now we call those assists because we can observe that throughout their life cycle, we are assisting sales through marketing efforts. And we know that because we see downloads, we see clicks on ads, we see visits to our blog, and we give sales content to inspire conversations. All good. So yeah, so that's how we do it.
Yeah. It's funny because if you boil it all down to the simplicity, what is attribution? What are people trying to get after with attribution? They're trying to understand, am I making an impact? Am I justifying my existence and my spend? And I think what attribution is not really about what you can measure. It's about what data you can connect. And the problem is marketing is targeting all of these people and personas, and sales is talking to all these people on a deal and they come in and out of a deal. But because reps never take time to update who they're speaking with manually, when we look at opportunities, there's one person on there, yet we know we've talked to 10 or 12 that marketing has touched. And being able to harvest and automate and bring those people out of those conversations and onto the opportunity record, I think would solve a lot of problems for marketing to be able to start connecting the data points. But to your
That's true. However, I would say, look, you can still observe. If it's not a marketing attributed lead, it's still an assist, right? So we don't need to fight about this. Like, sales doesn't get less commission because we deliver the lead. Or maybe they do in some organizations, and there you have the problem. But there's no less commission for sales. So why do they care if they brought in the lead or we brought in the lead, right? We're all aligned on the same goal. And I don't care. If they bring in the lead, great.
It shouldn't matter. It should be about like the person got onto the opportunity. Now what's would be interesting is how many times did marketing touch it? How many times did sales?
That's right. That's right. Look at the contribution of both teams. It is never one or the other.
Right.
If you, at least when we observed it, when we looked over every single sale, we would see the presence of sales and the presence of marketing. And you would see also conversations had around marketing, right? Like, for example, you download a report, the salesperson calls the next day and they have a discussion. Okay, right? We prompted another good, meaningful discussion.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Yep.
Yeah. Who cares what prompted it? That's what we're here for.
That's what we're here for. Love it. I want to be cognizant of time. So what I would love to do is just transition to what we call a lightning round, which is a little bit more personal and outside of work. So what's the favorite part of being a marketing leader?
Whether it's marketing or RevOps, for me, more recently, what gets me jazzed is seeing my people grow and observing how much more they can do and how much smarter they're getting and how much more effective at their jobs they are and how much satisfaction they get out of that.
Yeah.
That gets me pretty jazzed.
What about least favorite? Or sometimes I ask the question a little bit differently. What's really hard about your job?
Some mental models that some people have about marketing that are sometimes impossible to get over, right? If you have somebody who just doesn't believe in marketing and thinks anyone could do it, I can't overcome that mental model. Like, I can show you all the dollar signs. I can show you how much pipeline. I can show you how much revenue you wouldn't have had. I can show you that we delivered 3 or 4x what we spent on marketing and how awesome is that. And they're just like, I can do that in my basement. Like, I've never done marketing before, but I could do that. Those kind of mental models for me are really frustrating because there's no amount of rationale or data that can overcome that. And I don't really want to spend my time trying to convince someone who cannot be convinced.
Yeah. What about your advice you'd give to your younger self, right? So knowing what you know now or having the benefit of hindsight, maybe what would you have done differently in your career or help you learn from your mistakes maybe?
Yeah. Here's what I would have said to my younger self, because I was really not good about this. I would have said, you need to maintain your relationships, make that part of your job, right? Maintain relationships. Networking is really important, not just because you want to have friends at work, not just because it's good for you, but because everybody in marketing, everybody in your company gets better when you talk to more people and when you learn from more people and when you understand from more people. So I would have said, start doing that sooner than I did.
Yeah, it's so funny you say that, because I was going through an exercise recently where I was looking at just some people on LinkedIn, and I'm like, here are people that I had really good relationships with 15 years ago, like really good. And for whatever reason, life goes on and things fall. And it's like,
right.
just reach out to those people and say, you know what? Yeah. It'd be great to reconnect again.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And those connections are really important just as a way to stay part of a community, as a way to learn from each other, as a way to provide service to someone else, right? Yeah. Sometimes it's not about how they can help you, but how you can help them. And I would say it should be more often be about how you could help them. When I was a bit younger, I really didn't place a lot of value on that. I was so worried about getting home and fighting an hour's worth of traffic and seeing my kid before they went to bed that I was just like, I have to squeeze every last minute out of every day. I have so much crunch time. And I was so worried about being able to get my job done in that time that I just did not invest in maintaining relationships.
I'll give you an opportunity maybe to plug. So I think one of the things that I've noticed is you're part of the CMO huddles, right? And I think you're a founding member of CMO huddles.
Yes.
And it's really right in line with kind of what we're talking about. So maybe plug a little bit. What is CMO huddles? How often do you get together and what do you talk about?
Yeah. CMO huddles is exactly that. It's it's one of the ways in which I recommitted to being part of a network and staying connected with people. So it's a group of marketing leaders that gets together. Sometimes it's once a month, but often it's more than once a month. They have extra huddles. You get together and a lot of the times you just problem solve, right? Sometimes it's learning on a particular topic. Like we'll focus on what do we need to know about account-based marketing? But sometimes it's like, what's the problem that you need to solve today? And here we are as a team. Five of us have been through this. Here's what our experience was.
Yeah.
So it's been a really, really great experience. And there's lots of friends that I've made who I talk to them once a month.
Yep. How often does the group get together? Is it like a program cadence, like once a month?
Yes. Yeah. There's usually at least one huddle a month. And then they have sometimes extra huddles. Right. Yeah. And then there's, of course, a Slack group where we talk, we post job openings or chat through problems or recommend vendors or here's a tool I use to manage my people.
Yeah.
Here's a book that was really great. All sorts of things.
So what does Julie like to do outside of work?
I do a lot of fitness related things. So I do some running. I like hiking and strength training and walking outside. There's a lot of fitness in my spare time.
You're in Maryland, so I'm assuming we're on the bridge of springtime, so you probably can't wait to get a little warmer. And
you would be surprised. Like there have been some sub 20 degree runs that we'll do, like with my friends, you know.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is about just staying connected with your running friends, right? It's not so much that I'm looking forward to a 22 degree run, but I am looking forward to catching up with my friends that I see two or three times a week when we run together. So it does keep you into it. And of course, I'm happy. A lot of my spare time is just talking to my children. They're both adults, but one is in his last semester of college and the other's out in the workforce. So it's fun to get together with them and talk with them. And that's my spare time.
Yeah. Last question, because I thought it was really fascinating. You are a co-author of a children's book.
Oh, you went deep into the archives to find that one.
I did. Tell me about that.
So a very, very, very long time ago, a friend of mine and I were on a walk and there was just something we wanted to do to make the world a better place. And we came up with this concept together. She's an excellent designer. So we co-authored the book, but she did all of the design work on it. So I would say she should get more than 50% of the accolades for this. And all the proceeds went to the Heifer Foundation.
That's fantastic. So
it was a fun project.
Yeah, good. Well, listen, Julie, I appreciate your time. I thought this was a great conversation. I know our audience will as well. That's another episode of the Revenue Lounge. Just want to wrap it up and thank you again and have a great weekend.
Thanks. Thank you. Have a good weekend.
All right. Thank you.